Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Paul Nichols. I'm the investor coach. I'm here to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing. I hope this finds you well today. Boy, the market sure has been picking up lately. Let's go ahead and get the market update kicked off right away. Boy, it certainly is the best one for the month of June so far. In fact, we're doing really well. We've really caught up in the last week or so as it relates to the returns in the market as a whole. As a quick refresher, the reason we do the market update is to give people an idea of how the entire global marketplace is doing based on a number of well-known index in different areas, or indice, plural, in areas of the market, because we believe that investing is relatively simple. Own equities, rebalance, diversify, realize you're in for the long haul. We have adapted and utilize the empirical science that has been proven over the last 50 years, the exact science that's taught in every school in this country and taught how to invest. It's not about managers, it's about the market. So the idea is we like to do a market update to give people a source that they can go to and get a quick snapshot of how the market's doing as a whole. Because the social, political, economic climate that we're in today, this week, this month, this decade, this century, is not going to change what's going to happen as it relates to how we do investing unless the entire world changes. And we have some extinction-level type event that would change the way we do business because unless that happens, capitalism and self-preservation will always come to the forefront, which is what you do when you invest. You take advantage of innovation and entrepreneurism and capitalism and the fact that people are trying to grow their businesses and their families and their finances, etc. So the market update is very important. Let's talk about the Russell 2500. Let's start there. That's an index that's used to measure small to mid-sized companies in the U.S. These would be small U.S. year-to-date, ladies and gentlemen. We got 8%, 8% year-to-date in the small area of the marketplace. Ain't it great? Let's go on to the Russell 2000. That measures small to very small micro area of the market, and that's 7.89% year-to-date. So year-to-date, as of June 22nd, market close, we have respectively 8% in the small area U.S. of the marketplace. Now, when we move on over to the large cap, these are not small companies, but large companies, the value, not growth, but value area, we see actually the laggard of all the areas of the market is in large value. That's about 2.15%. It's still to the positive, though, which is important. When we go on to look at small value, not large value, but small cap value size companies, we get 3.64%, year to date as of June 22nd, 2015. And then we round out the U.S. arena with S&P 500, which is predominantly U.S. large companies. That's the index that most of us see on the nightly news. That's thought to be indicative of how our economy is doing as a whole. That's 3.11%. So really, small is smoking it right now, and large is not doing as great. They're doing about half of what small is. So at this point, though, overall, the market's up. Yay, team. We're 6 months in, roughly, a little better into 2015, and we have a positive market. I don't see red anywhere, which is always a good sign. Because you never know what year the market's going to be up. The market has a two-thirds bias. Two out of every 3 years is up. One out of every 3 years is down. We just never know which years are going to be up and which years are going to be down. In fact, when you look historically, you can't put three negative years together. You could look at a portfolio historically that was aggressive and find three concurrent negative years. And only one time in history, and that was in the early 2000s when we dealt with the tech bubble and some bubbles, if you will. But other than that, that's what we see. The market's up two out of every 3 years and down one out of every 3 years. The market has had incredible growth in all areas of the market when you look at it over the long haul, especially. Let's go international, which you should be international, and not just when the whim hits you or the news says you should be international. You should be everywhere all the time, because you never know what horse is going to win in a race. This is why you have the option to pick different horses, but prudence would dictate, and the science certainly supports, that from an investing perspective, one should not try to pick and choose, but rather own the entire marketplace, and that is all the asset classes that would encompass that. So with international in mind, how's international doing? Well, we use the Morgan Stanley Capital International Index. For the World Index, which is basically all your developed countries, about 22, 23 developed countries, we have 5% for the year. So the developed countries internationally are doing well, yay team. When we go to the emerging markets, the emerging market areas, which would be roughly 22, 23 countries that are not developed markets, but rather emerging markets, in year to date, that's 3.25. So it's up. But when we look at the winner, winner, chicken dinner, ladies and gentlemen, as of June 22nd, it would be the Morgan Stanley Capital International IFA Index. That's Europe, Australia, and the Far East. 8.33%. Ain't it great? Well, hey, you know, we all love volatility, don't we? We love volatility when it's up. We just don't like it when it's down. And you know, the key, one of the key tenets of investing is rebalancing. So it's vital that we take these market returns, and as we get these returns, we rebalance our portfolios periodically. The intent of rebalancing, besides locking in gains, it's to really manage the risk and the volatility. So that's our market update for the 22nd of June. I'm recording this the 23rd, but the 22nd of June, and I hope that enriches you in some way, shape, or form. Let me just take a couple minutes and share a thought with you. And I just, this has been on my mind lately. I did a little research and looked at some numbers. I want to use the word shocked by the numbers, because I expected them to be significant. But I do have to say, in qualifying them, that I had no idea they were as big as they are. And that's really when we start to get into debt. You know, when we look at this country's debt, and we talk to people about our national debt, a lot of people will make the comment. And by the way, the booming you're hearing in the background is I'm doing this during a thunderstorm. It's not some resonance of my point. But when we look at the national debt, most people say to me, well, you know, Paul, I mean, if I say what's the national debt, most people say, well, it's around $18 trillion. And if you go and look it up, you'll find it's roughly right in that neighborhood. I mean, in the last, you know, every day they got these calculators you can go online and see, and they just keep ticking away. It's crazy. But that's not really accurate. Because when you look at our national debt, our total debt, we have to consider what is called unfunded liabilities. Now, the unfunded liabilities would be Medicare, Medicaid, and government pensions. Those are unfunded liabilities. Now, why are they called unfunded? Well, this gets into a whole kettle of fish. I'm wondering why they would call Social Security and Medicaid unfunded when we've paid those our whole life. You know, if you were to take the amount of money that you pay Social Security, add a modest level of growth to that annually, and then take that pot and start pulling an income stream off of it, it's significantly higher in all the calculations that we've attempted in looking at that than the government will pay you in a Social Security check. So the fact that they want to make a comment, this is the government, this is the Congressional Budget Office making a comment that we have a $127 trillion national debt, ladies and gentlemen, when you consider three unfunded liabilities, Social Security, Medicare, and government pensions. And they should not be, in my opinion, called unfunded, because the fact of the matter is they've been funded. The government pensions haven't, but Social Security and Medicare certainly have. And they continue to be funded by taking payroll from folks. So when we start talking about the national debt being $18 trillion, that's a joke, ladies and gentlemen. Our national debt is $127 trillion. In fact, when you look you probably don't want to go look because it's scary stuff. I read the Congressional Budget Office reports on occasion. I go and I look at the information there, and it shocks me when I read something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing, that the Congressional Budget Office has 95%, they believe that they have 95% confidence that by the year 2031, that Social Security will run out of money. In other words, there will not be revenue. There will not be any revenue sources to provide that. Now, here's what's scary about that, ladies and gentlemen, especially for me, this kind of hits home personally, is in 2031, I'll be full retirement age that year. That's the year I become full retirement age qualified and can go get my Social Security. The same year they're telling me it's not going to be there, which is kind of scary. Now, what this leads to is not the doom and gloom, because I'm not a doom and gloom guy. We call our firm Financial Abundance for a reason. We're optimistic, but we're also realists, and we have to consider certain things like this. And this is the one question I wanted to pose. The reason I brought up the debt was this. Do you believe tax rates will be higher, lower, or the same in the future? Now, why is that an important question to ask, folks? Well, because a lot of folks are doing their planning, and the vast majority of retirement planning I see, they're basing it on answering the question by saying that they believe tax rates are going to be lower. Now, intellectually, when I have the conversation with them, I just had it with a room of 50 people a couple weeks ago, asked folks to raise their hand. Do you believe tax rates are going to be higher, lower, or the same in the future? Every single person had their hand raised that they would be higher. And just to make sure I wasn't mistaken, I went back and qualified it again. There's not one single individual in this room that believes tax rates are going to be the same or lower in the future, not one. I've asked the question of thousands. It could be in the neighborhood of tens of thousands of people. And I rarely get anything but the belief that tax rates will be higher in the future. And when we look at the reality of the CBO reports, our unfunded liabilities, just the sheer spending. I think of it, every dollar they spend on some program that's meant to lift someone up is a dollar they're taking out of my bucket. Now, obviously, it's not that. It's not that clear, but boy, it sure feels that way when it starts to get close to your pocketbook. Now, the reason I bring this up is this. If you believe tax rates are going to be higher in the future, then I would ask you another question, and that is, does it make sense then to postpone paying them? The answer to the question is very important, because when it comes to retirement planning, when it comes to, ladies and gentlemen, let's be real here, all your financial planning, how much time and effort do we all spend earning dollars? How much time and effort do we really spend trying to understand those dollars and how to put them to the best use? But unless you understand and start to really focus in on the end game of when you need the money and what's the classification of the money, what's the situation with the money then, you may want to ask yourself, well, I thought I was going to be in a lower tax bracket when I retired. I thought that was going to be an automatic. Well, I don't normally see that. In fact, I rarely see that when you look at the fact that most people have no deductions. They have less income in retirement, no deductions, so they're actually making less income paying the same or higher taxes. Then they look a little further and realize they have a permanent tax lien on their retirement account because they owe the government taxation on any of the accounts that they deferred, believing tax rates are going to be lower, but yet they say they're going to be higher. So there's this massive conflict that we see in the American psyche today. And that is one question the vast majority of people answer, yes, we believe tax rates are going to be higher. But when you look at the way that they're saving their money and the things that they're doing, their actions are saying, we believe tax rates are going to be lower. So I can see why there's this, I'm looking for the word, I can't find the word right now, this conflict, this internal conflict, when you start to really honestly ask yourself serious questions about retirement planning and or the future of your financial picture when you start to really hone in on some of the realities of planning, not the rules of thumb, which in my opinion, the vast majority of the rule of thumbs mislead people. They misinterpret them. They don't understand them. And they try to make a lot of their plans work based on rules of thumb when there's very few rules of thumb that I have found in the final analysis, taking the academic aspect and applying it to the real world situation, that actually work out to the benefit of the client. In fact, I find most often they work out to the benefit of the financial industry. They work out to the benefit of the insurance industry, the banking industry, the government, taxation, and other areas, not the individual investor. In fact, most of the rules that I see, most of the rules of thumb that I see, most of the things that people do, the things they pick up at the water cooler or they pick up somewhere along the line, these rules of thumb often are the things that in fact stop them from really living an abundant retirement, living in more of an abundant lifestyle, and it puts people in a position where they start to think from a scarcity mindset. Well, let me leave that alone because I'm getting fired up over here. If you'd like to learn more about what I'm talking about, the vein of thinking that I'm heading toward, you just call our office, get online, there's contact information, FAI Coach. Call the office, I'll take your call. Just call in and tell them that you're referring to the conversation about taxation I did on iTunes, and that you'd like a few minutes of my time. I'll be happy to chat with you. Paul Nichols, President of Financial Abundance. We're a registered investment advisory firm located in Happy Valley, State College, Pennsylvania. We appreciate you listening. I hope this enriches your life. We believe education leads to clarity. Clarity leads to confidence. And only with confidence can one really achieve peace of mind. Is it achievable? You bet it's achievable. You don't need to know everything, just a few right things.